Well, happy Monday evening, everyone. My name is Pam Stack, your host, and this is Office on the Air. Welcome back after a month-long hiatus. I have missed you all so much. The brilliant Terry Lynn Coop from Blue Plate Special has generously and magnificently filled in for me while I've been gone. I wish I could tell you I've been taking a vacation. Not true. As many of you know, Office on the Air has developed a press wing. We will be releasing a set of short story anthologies, fiction short story anthologies, on or around October 1st. I hope you listen. But I'm kicking off my return back to broadcasting with a really terrific crime fiction writer, someone whose book, Canary, absolutely made me fall in love with his writing. Dwayne Swazinski is with me tonight. He is a terrific writer, writes in a bunch of different genres. So I'm really glad to welcome Dwayne to the show. Dwayne, welcome to your debut with Authors on the Air. Thank you for agreeing to be with me.
My pleasure, Pam. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thank you. You know, I was just, you and I are talking in the green room, and I was saying, geez, you know, I can't keep a handle on all the stuff that you're doing. You're so busy, you don't even have a website, and that's kind of fascinating to me. I wish I could get away with that, but I had to go and look up information about you in Wikipedia, because you really don't say a whole lot about yourself, but your wiki page is pretty interesting. I did remember that you were an editor with Men's Health magazine and at Details,
right.
And then you worked with some in Philly for a paper, but it's been a long time since you've done that, correct?
Oh, it actually, yeah, it's been almost 10 years since I've had a legitimate job. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Wow, a legitimate job. You're
yeah,
so funny. But prior to that, you wrote nonfiction. You were you're a big fan of of bank robberies and crime, aren't you?
Right. Yeah. Anything that you shouldn't be doing, like drinking, bank robbery, crime. I mean, it's sort of vice fascinates me, obviously. And it's funny, though, I got into nonfiction writing because I couldn't break into fiction. Like I wrote a novel first and found an agent with that novel, and then we couldn't sell the book. So in the meantime, he was like, well, do you ever consider writing nonfiction? And I thought, sure. And the first nonfiction book, oddly enough, was A History of Bank Robbery, which years later led to my first crime novel. So it was a very roundabout way of getting back to what I wanted to do in the first place.
Now, is Secret Deadman your first crime fiction book?
I guess so, although it's my first novel. It's a blend of, like, science fiction, horror, crime, mystery. It's kind of like every first novel. It's everything in your brain goes into one book, you know.
Sure. Typical
first novel mistake. It just was, you know, I'm fond of it, but it's crazy. And when it didn't sell, I sort of promised myself, okay, you got to pick one genre and try to do that, you know, and not try to do eight genres in one book. And that was The Wheelman, my second novel, but I think first proper crime novel.
Interesting to me that you're saying that you kind of had this mashup of genres in the first book, because when I speak to particularly noir crime fiction writers, noir and pulp, there is a lot, I think, when I ask what other genre would you like to write in, a lot of writers tell me horror or science fiction, you know, or supernatural, something like that. So you probably are, you know, one of the regular noir crime fiction writers, you know, although you're kind of like on speed. I mean, you have a deal with Marvel Comics. You've written, geez, I can't even think of all the stuff that you've got, all the stuff that you've written for with Marvel Comics, right? Marvel Comics?
Right, yeah. What's funny is it's deceptive. You go by Wikipedia, it seems like I'm doing everything all at once. That's over like a 10-year period. I mean, actually, I've written for Marvel. I was on contract when I first went freelance. So that was 10 years ago. And I've done things over the years. Recently, I just recently actually wrote a Star Wars tie-in comic that came out last month. So that's, you know, I still do once in a while, but it's funny. People always tell me, oh, you're so prolific, and I feel like I'm the laziest person ever. I really don't feel like I'm that prolific. I see other writers, like, just kicking butt every year. I kind of feel lazy. So it's always
now, but you're
weird
also
to hear
writing
that.
For DC Comics. Is that, like, kind of taboo to be doing two of them at once? No,
well,
aren't they polar?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it was like I kind of went from the Crypts to the Bloods. No, I went for Marvel at first, and then after my contract expired, and then went to work for DC. Just I was at DC for about a year and a half or so on one series, Birds of Prey. That was fun. And then from there, you know, I'm very much, you know, kind of a gigolo when it comes to comics. I'll write for anybody, you know. I'll hop in any bed, comics wise. So it's fun.
You're just a writing hoe, right? You're a writing hoe.
I'm a writing hoe. Yeah. Four color hoe. That's me.
There you go. So, you know, I want to talk about the book that turned me on to your writing, and that is Canary. I read that book. I thought it was one of the book's best noir crime fiction books I'd ever read. I still do to this day. I love that book.
You.
And yeah, to me, that book was everything noir is supposed to be, but like 10 times more. And I couldn't consume that fast enough. I'm not really even sure how it is I found that book. It may have been a NetGalley. It may not have been, I don't know. But probably NetGalley, I think. Were you with Mulholland with them?
I was, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
The Mulholland book.
So that's probably
so
where
I... You know, it's funny you said that. I mean, I started out writing that book thinking it might be an adult novel, because from the one character's point of view, it's very much a teen novel. But I was too nervous about having it just be a young adult novel, so I added the crime stuff to it, you know, thinking that, you know, I need two sides. I need to make sure I know this. And after a while, it became organic. It became how the book should be told. But it's just funny. I mean, I really thought the departure from my usual, like, mayhem and pulpy mayhem I usually write. So I'm happy that it comes across as a noir novel, which is my first love.
Yeah,
so
it's one fast-paced, kick-ass book. And I know I'm not the only one who thought so, because you were nominated for an Edgar for that, too, for Best Novel. Would you tell listeners a little bit about this story and a little bit about its twists and turns? Because it's a really interesting book, in my humble opinion.
Oh, sure. I mean, Canary is kind of a two-hander. One character is a 17-year-old college freshman, super brilliant, maybe a little naive, and her boyfriend, or sort of boyfriend, she likes him, he's sort of a jerk to her. He's busted, you know, for possession, or almost busted. He runs away, and the cops grab Sari, our protagonist, instead of him, and she refuses to rat on him. She won't give him up. So the other main character is Ben Wilde. He's the cop who tries to bust this guy. He wants to bust this sort of small-time dealer to work his way up the ladder and find, you know, the big dealer. Classic, you know, classic wire.
Get
you know,
the low-hanging fruit first, right?
Exactly. So they bump heads because she refuses to give him up, and Ben refuses to let go of this case, and they end up kind of antagonists, yet they're sort of almost partners, because instead of giving her boyfriend up, what Sari does is she decides to find other drug dealers for him to sort of like fulfill her social obligation. And that creates a whole bunch of trouble, you know. She's brilliant, but again, a little naive, and kind of stumbles into this really dark world. And Ben realizes kind of too late how bad this is. And it's a big chase to the end, and, you know, we'll see what happens. You have to read it to see what happens.
Yeah, so, I have to say, it was one of the – and I'm looking back on my purchase history and of how long ago I read this book, and it still stays with me. So – It really was. I think, a very well-written book. You also wrote Revolver just around the same time, and I did go to your publisher for and ask for a copy of it. An equally brilliant book. You've got great reviews on it. Let's talk about Revolver for a little bit, because, boy, this was this was a booklist best book of the year finalist, best book of the year. It was a finalist for the Hammett Prize. This is a really interesting story. I love the concept of this book. Would you tell a little bit about it, maybe just what the synopsis says? Because
sure.
I love this story. Talk about a generational screw-up, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I wanted to write this great, massive, like, generational cop story, but I didn't actually want to go through the hassle of writing a long generational cop story.
So I kind of skipped around.
I decided to chop the timeline up and kind of, you know, go from and chapter to chapter. It jumps like 20 years, then 30 years, and back to the beginning. So it's you know, it's almost we follow three timelines through this family's history. And I was fascinated by how certain times, you know, different time periods bump up against each other. You know, a moment 30 years ago has a huge impact on today, only you don't really know that because we're stuck in a very chronological linear world. We don't always think about our history, you know, and how much it impacts us and how much the weight of history is on us. I mean, my favorite concept is that, you know, free will. We don't really have free will because of all of our history. You know, we have these generations pushing on us in a certain direction, and for us to be able to sort of buck that easily is kind of, you know, sort of silly. And the story is, it sounds highfalutin, but it's a murder mystery. It's two cops are gunned down in the 60s, and one of those cops, his son, of course, grows up to be a homicide detective, tries to solve his father's murder, thinks he knows who did it, and may or may not have exacted some justice on this guy. Now, 20 years after that, in our present, that cop's daughter, the granddaughter of the cop who was slain, opens this cold case for a college project and realizes that her dad may have targeted the wrong guy. So it's sort of a, you know, and it's told from all three, you know, generations simultaneously. And again, it was my way of exploring a family story. And in a weird way, it actually cheats. It actually goes back as a fourth hidden timeline, which I won't tell you much about, but there's more to it than it seems at first.
Sure. The interesting thing to me is I like the fact that it's almost a police procedural, because in cop families, they really do seem to be generational at times. I know I don't have a television, but I know, isn't that Bloods or something? I don't know. It's the thing with Tom Hanks. Isn't that Tom Selleck? Doesn't he come from a generation of cops or something?
I think so. You know, yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, Blue Bloods or something. I don't remember the name of the show because I don't have a TV. But I've heard people talk about it. But you know, it seems to me it's a generational type profession, and so I like how it's all tied in that way. That one's a street cop, one's a homicide detective, and the daughter is this forensic science student, so you know she's leaning toward law enforcement at some time. Really well done book, just really terrific. I really enjoyed reading it. Congratulations on
thank
that.
You.
And those, by the way, folks, are still available on all regular book retailers. You can go and order them from your freestanding bookstores too. Go and do that. Now, here more recently. And I really like this, is that you're re-releasing the Parker novels with Richard Stark. And the first one is Ask the Parrot, and the other one is No One Runs Forever. So those books are being released tomorrow, correct?
Yes, by University of Chicago Press. They've done the entire run of Parker novels by Richard Stark, who, of course, is also Donald Westlake. And it's the first time they'll all be in print, which to me – I mean, 10 years ago, I was the guy hunting bookstores, dusty used bookstores, to find these out-of-print titles that I was dying to read. So it's a minor miracle they're all out and available to new generations of crime fans.
So what did you do to change Westlake's vision or to enhance it or to modernize it? What is your role as the kind of co-author of the modernized version, of the re-released version?
It's the same. All I do is write the introduction. I had no. It's not remastered, rebooted. It's all the original text. It's the original book, but with new introductions. So yeah, I'm just the guy in front of the curtain saying, "Hey, look how awesome this is. Go read it." And then I'm off the stage. I have no role.
You know,
that.
I bet you people everywhere are going to be tickled because Westlake, of course, is one of the greatest crime writers of all times.
Absolutely.
You don't get any better than that. You don't get any better than that.
I agree. My all-time favorite writers. I met him once. It was like I lost the power to speak. I shook his hand, and he probably thought I was an idiot, which I was. No, he's great. He's amazing. Was amazing.
Yeah, he was. I know a lot of crime fiction writers today, and we may call them mysteries or thrillers or whatever, but essentially it's still crime fiction, really idolize him and consider him like the standard bearer. That's the gold standard of crime fiction, I suppose, correct?
Well, Yeah, he did it all. I mean, he did, you know, funny mysteries. He did really hard-boiled mysteries. He did the Parker series, which are like the anti-hero. I mean, he wrote actually one of the all-time great horror movies, The Stepfather. That was all Donald Westlake, which, you know, I'm just amazed by the scope of his career. And I would kill to have, like, you know, a fifth or a tenth, a 20th of his success. Just as a pure writer, he's amazing.
Wow. Now, another thing that, this is what blows me away. You and Fernando Blanco are doing a novelization of Star Wars Rogue One?
No, just a comic book. We did a one-shot
comic
came out last month. Yep.
Wow.
Oversized comic. Yeah, it's sort of the two characters, Cassian and K2SO, the robot guy.
Yes.
It's how they met.
Yes.
It's their origin story. So if you're a Star Wars nerd and you want to check out how they first met up, you need to check this out. It was a lot of fun.
Great characters. K2SO was one of my favorite characters. I'm a little bit of a Star Wars geek myself. I don't read the comic books, but I would imagine it's great.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I'm flipping through your Amazon history, and I thought it was originally in Spanish. It's not. It's Italian. You also have a book shot with James Patterson. What is that book about?
Right. Well, you know, they actually had three book shots with James Patterson.
Oh.
I was lucky enough to invite me to do one, and then did two more. So the first one was called The House Husband. It's kind of a cat and mouse game between a house husband who may or may not be a psycho, and a cop who is just had a baby and is wrestling with, you know, returning to the job after childbirth. So these two characters collide. And the best about book shots is they're lean and mean. It's like they're only 25,000
yes.
words, so maybe a third of the usual size of a novel, and they have to move. I've never been accused of, you know, writing slow, but the first bit of editorial I got was like, hey, speed it up. So I knew, I was like, yes, this is going to be fun, to hit the gas.
Wow, how fun is that?
Yeah.
And these have done quite successfully for you, and the reviews are really good. I have to admit, as I said to you, I'm not much of a comic book reader, but I recognize the titles on your comic books, and so I guess that's a good thing. And actually, it's a funny thing. I know it's like a resurgent type of a reading genre now. I mean, everybody is doing comics, and I didn't realize how and graphic novels, and I did not realize how popular they were in my time. my mom, who encouraged us all to read, believe me, she did. Would not allow us to read comics. I don't know why. I could read a milk carton or a cereal box, whatever else, but no comics. So,
right.
So isn't that strange?
And
it's such a huge genre now. Yeah, it's amazing. So when you write, when you did a one-off on Star Wars, on Rogue One, when you do those, do you have permission to use the characters' names, or do you have to ask, get permission to do that? I'm not really sure how it works when you do comics
that. Usually a company hires you to tell the adventures of the characters they own. So anything for Marvel, I would write about, you know, they would assign me, okay, you're going to do a Wolverine story, or you're going to do, you know, an X-Men story here, or a Punisher story. So they have the rights to that character. They own the rights, obviously, and you have to pitch them what you would do with that character, and hope they like it, and kind of then go through the story. I mean, the biggest difference between, you know, for prose writing and comic writing is, with comics you have just a finite number of boxes. Imagine like there's a 22-page issue, so you have 22 pages, and on each page maybe you have 4 to 6 boxes, and they're snapshots to tell your story. On like a movie, it's all running, you know, you sort of, it goes, and on like a book, it's all, you know, narrative. It's a kind of, it's an interesting hybrid of like film and prose, I think, that you pick your moments for the biggest impact, and it's really delightful.
Yeah, so you're on anorexic Twitter when you're writing the narrative for you have very few words to tell an entire page of story, right?
Right, and you pick those moments, and it's funny, people have asked me, well, so you just write the stuff in the balloons, right? I'm like, well, no, I write the entire story. I mean, I do the entire story, and the artist then depicts it. The biggest comparison is like, I'm a screenwriter, and then the director is the artist. the artist, you know, directs the thing and shows you who the camera is, and, you know, I'm just the screenwriting guy, you know. And of course, screenwriters are hugely important. That's where the story comes from. But the director is
sure.
the star, and the artist is the star in comics. So,
the artist creates the image first, and then you tell the story, or do you collaborate by frame or page by page? I don't understand how the process works.
Oh, sure. It starts with the writer. Always starts with the writer. And I kind of map out. For an issue, I will do a 1,000-word synopsis for my editor and say, here's the story I'm planning to tell. He or she will read it and think, oh, cool. And then I'll do a script based on that synopsis. So I'll just, it's almost like a screenplay. Here's panel one, page one. Here's what happens, and here's who says what. You know, you just do a script. And then only when that's finished, then the artist sees it and then starts his process or her process, breaking it down, you know, drawing the panels. They usually do pencils, which is like a rough sketch of the art, and they ink it.
Sure.
And they color it. It's a long process, but the story comes first, as it should be. And being there was the word, right?
So this is the interesting thing to me, though. You said you write a 1,000-word synopsis. Do you even have that many words in the finished product?
Oh yeah, totally. You totally do, because they're it's 22 pages, and every page is usually I'm trying to break it down. It's at least 1,500 words, 2,000 words of script, I'm guessing. But yeah, it's pretty dense, especially if you're trying to give some backstory for the artist. That stuff is never on the page, but it's important to have the artist know what you're going for. Yeah. Again, like screenwriting, you know? It's very similar.
Yeah,
to that.
It's even more condensed than that, than screenwriting, isn't it? Because you
right.
don't have moving picture to give your narrative. You've just got an image. You just got a screenshot of it. So... I find
right.
that fascinating. Do you like to write like flash and short stories and synopsis type storytelling? Do you prefer the long form? What is your preference when it comes to writing?
I always, for some reason, think in terms of novel. Like, I have a hard time with short stories because they seem just more difficult. It's fewer words, but I put the same amount of work and thought into them I would a novel. So yeah, I end up like killing myself to do a short story, which is, I don't know. People say to me, you're crazy. Just crank one out. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I really don't know how to do that. Just sort of crank it out. And I have to like really live with it for a while. So for some reason, my thoughts go to novel-sized things. However, working for James Patterson with these bookshops, I do love the novella-sized length. That's kind of cool, that sort of space. Some of my favorite novels are that length, like James Cain's Postman Always Rings Twice,
right.
Horace McCoy's They Shoot Horses. I mean, all these great early crime novels were just so short and condensed and fun. So I do like that form.
Now, isn't that the trend, though, don't you think? I'm not sure if it's because for a while books became too wordy and maybe lost their cachet with the reading audience because they were just these huge literary tomes that really took forever to get. I guess that's why I'm not a literary fiction reader. It almost seems
right.
monotonous to me. I just can't do it. I'm not smart enough. I don't understand the metaphor and the everything. So, but give me something. I don't care if the book is long as the it's moving forward and at a pretty good clip.
Right.
It's my understanding that most readers now prefer a shorter book. Why do you think that is?
It's funny. I've heard the opposite still. I still hear that people like that big, thick read to like sink into. I'm not kidding. I've heard very few people tell me that they like the short and sharp, reads, which is bizarre. Do you think they would? Life's too long to like waste on a long book going nowhere. And I'm with you. I mean, I think, certain literary fiction is great, but a lot of it is like just sort of, pretentious.
Meandering angst.
It's
like taking forever for a guy to row from one side of the lake to the other and has 5 million emotions in there,
right.
The reason I can't really read historicals either, because it has way too much angst I'm like, oh, please just get to the freaking action,
Right.
Do you
right.
like to
I will
read
say no.
within
I will...
your – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I didn't
no, not at all, please. Go
no,
ahead.
No, you.
Not at all.
It's your interview, baby.
Oh,
you
I,
talk.
I will say, though, I just finished watching 18 hours of Twin Peaks, which to some, meandering went nowhere. I found it fascinating, utterly fascinating, because it showed you things you've never seen before on TV. So if, by comparison, a literary writer, has a big novel, thick novel, full of amazing images and wordplay, I'll happily go along with that ride if I don't think even that there's no action. You have to be really, really good, though, to pull that off. You have to be like David Lynch to pull that off. You can't just, do it and hope people get it.
Plus the fact, do you think because you watched the episodes back-to-back like that, that's why you were able to see things that maybe others didn't? You had it kind of condensed down into a smaller time frame, just like if you're reading a book.
I didn't binge. Yeah. I didn't binge. I watched
you didn't
it week
binge.
To week. So, yeah, this is I didn't binge,
okay.
No. I went for the journey.
I binge read, and when I start a book that I just finished two fantasy novels this weekend. I actually read, it was probably about 1,000 words combined, but
wow.
Probably the best fantasy fiction I've ever read in my life. It's just amazing.
Wow.
I'm glad to say. Lee Verdugo wrote a book called Six of Crows, and then the second book in the duology, she calls it a duology, but the second book is called Crooked Kingdom. And I have never, ever read anything like that. I'm really picky about the fiction that I read, and so
right.
I look typically for Nebula or Hugo Award-winning books and happen just to see it on one of the 1,000 sites that I get book notices on. So the first one is called Six of Crows. I highly recommend it to anyone. The book is so good that
sounds excellent. Oh, cool. Yeah, excellent.
It is. The cover art is what drew my eye to it. The same way for you, Canary drew my eye for your book. So
right.
I don't know if you – this is not like vampire stuff, okay? This is not paranormal romance. This is diehard crime in the fantasy world. And apparently she
right.
has a whole set of books about the Grisha, which are otherworld, people with special powers. And she kind of melds these two worlds together in old world, kind of, I get the impression it's like Amsterdam or Rotterdam or something like that. And just in freaking incredible. She gives the story and then she tells a backstory and it weaves seamlessly. There are no missing holes. That was when I look back to, because I wanted to do my review
great.
On them. Yeah, I wanted to do the review, Duane, and I went and looked on Amazon to see the number of pages. I was stunned, 1,000 words between the two books, and I went through them in a day. So it was
amazing.
Definitely
That's
worth
cool.
it.
I love that.
Yeah.
That
so
good.
What's happening with you nowadays? What projects are you working on? I know at one point you have a book that's out for or you have something that's been optioned. We may not be able to
right.
talk about it. we're hopefully going to hear more about that. But options are like everything else. They just someone has to say, oh, yes, I'll put money behind that. And typically that's what you wait
yeah.
for, correct?
Absolutely. And I moved to Los Angeles last summer. I've had books optioned over the years, and it's always, you hope for the best. And I realized that
right.
to really, make things happen, it helps to be here in person and kind of have to actually appear like a real person to them in front of them instead of just flying home. I come here for trips and have meetings, and then great, awesome, we love this. And then you fly home, and it's like they forget you, who you are. And so I came out here, and, I've had a few, both Revolver and Canary optioned for different things, and I'm helping out, helping the process a bit as much as I can.
Oh my God!
But also
I can see episodic TV for Revolver easily. It is such a good book. I can just see the continuing story. What an amazing television series that would be. So I'm crossing my fingers, and Canary, of course, a major motion picture. If not anything else, it would be great. Of course, I'm a little
That's
spoiled
cool.
now by your writing, so you'll excuse me. What's new? What's going on? What are you working on?
Well, I'm working on a new novel, and it's sort of it's not a sequel to either Canary or Revolver, but it is set in the same world. It's almost an unofficial trilogy. You'll see some characters in those two books in tiny cameo roles, but it's a brand new story. It kind of closes out this little trilogy, and I can't talk about it because I hate doing that. I hate, like, I let the air out of the balloon, it ruins it in the process. Yeah. So
I know. It's like a jinx. I get it.
Well,
I get it.
But I will say, though, there's no time hopping. It's actually the most straightforward book I've ever written. It's just, you know, pure, straightforward narrative. And it's kind of dark and weird. So it's fun so far.
Do you like that writing, that type of a writing process of all the different styles and the genres that you're, the formats, I should say, that you write in? Is that what you prefer doing the most?
Novels, you mean?
Yes.
Absolutely. No, I will never not write novels, even if I'm drummed out of the publishing business and, like, I will always still write these things because they're the most fun. Comics are fun, but it's a paid gig. You know, film and TV are fun because could be a very well-paying gig. But I'll never not write novels. They're just, you know, it's what I do. Sadly,
wow.
It's what I found.
So I said that we couldn't find a website for you because you're far too busy writing other stuff. If someone wanted to look you up, where would they go to find you?
You can always find me on Twitter at Swierzy. It's SWIERCZY. That's my handle. I know the whole name would be too cruel for my Twitter handle. But I'm also on Facebook. I have a Tumblr page. So I'm around. I mean, I'm easy to find. I just don't have a dedicated blog like I used to. It just seems a time suck, you know. I'd rather put the work into work.
Words on in a book versus, on social media. I get that. And you got to update all the time.
So
can I ask you, we have just so little time left, and I'm really sorry because I find your work so fascinating and your life so interesting. But usually at the end of my show, I like to play Final Five, like five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game?
Of course. I'm horrible at this for sure. Go for it. Let's do it.
Okay. So, we also call it Stump the Author. So, but it's pretty easy because it's all about you, okay?
Okay.
Obviously, I want to know, whose book are you reading?
Oh, right now I'm reading Mark Frost's List of Seven. Mark Frost, of course, writing Twin Peaks with David Lynch. I went back to his earlier book from the 90s, List of Seven. It's pretty cool so far.
Wow. How terrific.
Yeah.
And just as an aside from that, when I read you on Facebook, you do like to go back to older books a lot, don't you?
I do. I really do. Yeah. I'll reread books I've loved and kind of see if they hold up. I read it all across the board. I've never stopped.
One question I really like to know. Tell me, which are the books that you like to read over and over again? Because I have my favorites too. And a lot of people I know say they would never, ever read a book more than once. I think that's like, I can't imagine.
So,
who do you like to read?
Well, the truth is, actually, I have this thing where if it's more than like 5 or 10 years, I forget the book entirely. I know I loved it. I remember fond memories of reading it, but I can't tell you the plot again. I go back to reading James Cain, every so often and think, wow, this is amazing.
Wow.
And it's still amazing. You know, I love Patricia Highsmith.
Yeah.
I go back to her often. Jim Thompson,
yeah.
David Goodis.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of these guys, I kind of just go back to like, these mid-20th century, because it's the fun of the plot and the characters, but also the life and times. I love hanging out with somebody in the 50s and seeing how their lives worked. So off the top of my head, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I have like my bookshelf. I have my kind of collections of Library of American editions. I have Elmore Leonard up there, Hammett, Chandler, you know. But I also read a lot of hard science fiction. So that's, yeah, I can go on forever. Maybe after a few hours going through my favorites.
And who are you reading right now? Who did you just tell me you were reading?
Oh, it's Mark Frost, a book called
Mark
The List
Frost,
of Seven.
Right. The List of Seven. Because I'm writing it down. I want to go back. I like reading what authors tell me they're reading. So what do you like to do in your spare time when you're not reading and writing?
I love movie going. I mean, since coming to L.A., there's a lot of revival houses that show older movies. So I feel like I'm trying to catch up on things that I've missed over the years. So that's kind of my one hobby. I'll go see a double feature, once a week.
How cool.
Yeah.
Do you like any of the current films, let's say, from this year, last year? Obviously, you liked Star Wars if you wrote. Or did you not like Star Wars, Rogue One?
Oh, I did. No, I thought it was great. I thought it was a blast. Yeah, I love big pop, you know, pop culture movies. I like that kind of stuff. I love horror. I'm a horror movie guy. Actually, I'm headed tonight to see Dunkirk with my daughter. My daughter's a big history buff, so she wants to see it. I'm like, let's do it. Can't wait. So I missed that one, but
cool.
We're going to catch up tonight.
Interesting.
But,
what would be surprised to learn about you? What would friends and readers be surprised to learn about you?
That I'm just truthfully boring. I'm really a boring person. I'm the most vanilla person you ever want to meet. I save it all for the page. So it's better if people don't meet me. You'd be disappointed.
I just can't believe it. You're so creative. You are so creative.
Yeah.
Tell me something on your bucket list. Tell me something on
my
your bucket list.
Oh, geez. See, this is where I'm going to be bad at. It's all like work based, which is sad, right? I mean, I should have other interests and goals outside of writing, but that's kind of sadly it. Yeah. Oh no, write a good book before I die. I know, right?
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah,
sad.
You really are. So you've written in all of these. You've done all these different type of writing gigs, and you're pretty good at them all. You've gotten a lot of great reviews and all. Any thoughts as to what you would tell your daughter if she said, "Dad, I think I want to be a writer"? What would you say?
I'd encourage her, of course, but I guess the advice I always follow and I give to her is that if you can be talked out of it, then you're not a writer. You should write despite what anyone tells you and despite anyone trying to talk you out of it. If you still go back to it and do it, then congratulations, you're a writer, you know.
Oh, wow, that's really great. That's a really great answer. Of course, you're using reverse psychology. Very good. Very smart.
Oh, geez, thank you. Well, it's true. I believe it's true. I mean, I was pushed in many directions, you know, growing up, but always came back to, like, I just like writing stories, and I kind of couldn't be talked out of it, even though I knew it was a long shot. It would never pay. I was told you'd never make a living at it, and, you know, that's all probably good advice that I should have followed, but I didn't. So...
Yeah, but if you've got words in you that are dying to come out, then there's nothing you can do about it. It's, you know,
exactly.
I can't pass a book or a bookshelf or a bookcase or a bookstore or books in the grocery store when even if I've read every single one of them, I still have to peruse the list to see if there's maybe one that I missed. So
yeah,
I certainly understand that.
I'm the same way.
No, that's all right. I understand the urge. I mean, even, you know, I like to junk around at garage sales and thrift stores and everything, and
yeah.
I still go to the book section first. It's the craziest thing. So I understand where the passion is. Folks,
right.
I've been talking to Dwayne Serzinski, and I want to say it has been a pleasure speaking to you. One of my favorite writers. I'm going to recommend that you, if nothing else, you get Canary and Revolver. I think they're amazing books, certainly award-winning and award-worthy, and I thank you for being with me. Will you come back again sometime when you've got the trilogy under your belt?
Absolutely, Pam. This is a blast. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and absolutely, yes.
I am so glad you've been here. Don't go away. Folks, on Wednesday, I'll be talking to TJ Ellison, who, interestingly enough, met the author on Monday night at the kickoff of TJ's book tour for Lie to Me, met the author for Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom. And so when I posted the review, she said, oh, I just met her. TJ is going to be with me. I just saw her a month ago at RWA. She's on book tour right now, but she'll be here on Wednesday afternoon at 4:00. Remember, everyone, this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Dwayne, thank you so much for being with me. You and I will talk again soon. And folks, thank you for being with me my first night back from my hiatus. Have a great night, and thanks, Dwayne.